heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Well, certainly you've all heard of the words or the acronym PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And, you know, there's also what's sometimes referred to as PTSI, post-traumatic stress injury. And that's another term. And we've used that on the platform before. You might have heard that. But let's be clear here. This is a trauma. It's a point of life where something has traumatized you in your life. Now, the numbers are staggering in how many people, and certainly how many Americans, and how many people around the world this impacts. When we think of PTSD, I think probably you, like I, we think of our military heroes, we think of our veterans, we think of others like that, we think of law enforcement, right? And the reason is because the numbers are really high in those industries, because they're dealing with trauma on a moment-by-moment basis, right? And so trauma impacts their life a lot more. And they're but let's be clear. This PTSD or I business, trauma we'll call it, it's a fact of life, people. It impacts just about any of us. It can impact. It impacts mom and dad at home. It impacts middle America. And we're talking for all kinds of reasons. It could be a death in your family, somebody really close to you that sets off that. It could be a massive injury in your life or something that has traumatized you. Could be an abuse situation. Could be sexual abuse. Could be a near-death experience. Could be somebody who's just done something that traumatized you at that moment. And so when you think about it in those terms, you think about it, this becomes, that's where the, you know, they say, well, it's kind of a mental disorder. Well, what does that really mean? It's sort of a disorder and it impacts our brains. What I wonder right up front is, why does it impact some people more than others? And, you know, you start thinking about that. Some of us tend to internalize things probably more so than others. I can't explain that any more than that. I don't really know why that is, but it is true. And there sometimes it's just the level of the trauma has totally turned our life upside down. And it's hard sometimes to face that reality, people. But you know, the one thing I tell you all the time that, and it's so true today as it is any other day, life is a beautiful thing. We're blessed to be here. But it also sometimes can be a four-letter word, people. Life is ups and downs. Life moves quickly. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know what's going to, and that's why it's important. I always say to you again, let's live for today. Let's live in the moment. Don't live in the past. And that's probably part of the problem of PTSD as well, or PTSI, is many of us tend to live in the past. And this is a human behavior that we all tend to have. And that's real hard to shake, man. That's real tough, I got to tell you. If we can get over that one, we can probably cure a whole lot of things in our lives, quite frankly. Let's just remember that golden rule. Let's live for today. Let's live for the moment. Let's be blessed of where we're at and build on that. You know, I used to always have a say in life, and certainly I had this in the boardroom when I was in the boardroom. It's, you have the rearview mirror and you have the front window. You know, if you spend your time looking through the rearview mirror, that little rearview mirror, and some people spend 90% of their time there, what I encourage you to do is this. Use the front window 90% of the time and only use the rear view 10%. Now, that's my golden rule, meaning the 10%, you never want to forget some of that past. It's because they're history lessons there, and they'll help us live a more fulfilling life ahead. So don't ever lose those, but don't stay saturated in that. That's all. Live for today. And that's my, I'm going to say that right up front here. So I don't what that means to some of the folks we have on the call here today, I don't really know. But this is Malcolm's golden rule and how I think we can all live a better life. And listen, if I can help a few people out today, hopefully we can help hundreds out or thousands out. But let's start with just a handful. And let's see if we can improve people's lives. And again, the numbers are pretty wild here. We're going to get into a lot of information today, friends, on this. We're going to speak to some people, some patients, and some folks who've gone through a very unique procedure. We're going to speak to some people with some real life experiences that have suffered some trauma, both military vets, and they suffered some amazing trauma in their life. And some of these stories you may have heard about, they were on the national stage a bit here. But we're going to open it up initially here. We're going to talk to a very interesting doctor, a man who has reached out of the norm. You know, again, breaking ground. I always love this. Innovative ideas and thoughts. That's where it's at. That's what makes, you know, this all work so well and what makes our country so unique. And you'll meet today Dr. Eugene Lipov. I'd like you to meet Dr. Eugene Lipov now and tell you just a little bit more about him. He is board certified in anesthesiology and pain management, has been practicing in the field of pain medicine since 1990. Okay. Comes out of the Illinois area. In fact, a lot of this, he works out of this right out of the Chicago area. Now, people fly in from all over the world to have this procedure done, which we'll talk about today a little bit as well. And we'll tell you what that's all about and what it's called. But my message today is this. And the question I put out there is, can PTSD or PTSI, as I referenced, be cured? Can it be cured? Is there a way forward for that? So let's think about that. And we'll keep that on the side there as we move forward here with this. And so let me start here, Dr. Lipov, and ask you this. You know, right out of the gate, let me hear from you and ask you, what's the difference, or is there a difference? Or let's educate folks. What's the difference between PTSD and or PTSI?
Well, thank you for having me on the show, for one. So let me just, let's review the history, if you don't mind. So PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, was a term that was originally described in 1980. So disorder is a very non-specific term. It just basically says a patient has certain type of behaviors or complaints. So it's really non-specific. So Dr. Frank Ogberg, a very famous psychiatrist from Harvard, came up with the term PTSI, which is post-traumatic stress injury. What that means is somebody has stress or severe problems, which leads to brain injury or brain change. What that means, it's a biologic phenomena, which is possible to diagnose using biological scans. So people talk about PTSD as an invisible wound.
Right.
My contention is that PTSD or PTSI is invisible if you have the wrong scanner. If you have the right scanner, you can actually see it. So based on the same principle, what I do is a biologic treatment to PTSD or PTSI.
So in your honest opinion, I mean, are we going to suggest it's probably more of an injury than a disorder?
Absolutely. And,
okay.
You know, there's many scans to prove that.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought I had a feeling that was it. I didn't know for certain, Doc, but I had a feeling that was it. And I've referenced that before in the platform, but I'm not an expert in this realm at all. And before we get to the procedure, and I know there's a lot of cool things you're on the front lines with, and we'll talk about that, but let's first address what I started to talk about up first in the brief monologue we just did here and trying to educate people a little bit more on this. Now, listen to these numbers here. I went to a couple of sites. I assume these are accurate places. I went to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and I also went to the National Institute of Mental Health. And some of the numbers I received here, Doc, are this. First of all, they both address the fact that, you know, going through trauma is not a rare occurrence. Many of us go through it in one way, shape, or form in our lifetimes. In fact, about 6 of every 10 men, now listen to these numbers, 60% they say, and 5 out of every 10 women, 50%, experience at least a trauma in their lives that will impact them in this way. Now, those are some pretty big numbers, Doc, and we're talking about things like, for instance, for women, we're talking about sexual assault, child sexual abuse, things of that nature. For men, accidents, physical assault, combat, disaster, you know, injury, that kind of a thing. Are those numbers fairly accurate, do you think, Doc, or do you have a different take on that?
No, I think those numbers are correct. Let me just give you a couple other numbers, if I may.
Please, please.
So 1 out of 3 women in their lifetime will have a sexual assault of some sort. which is to me is a horrendous number.
Now stop there a minute. Hold on. 1 out of 3 you just said?
Yes.
Now, see, I just want to stop a minute with you. Isn't that sick? Hold on a minute. What does that say to you about society, please? What does it say about it?
Well, let me give you my background for a second. You'll see what it says to me.
Okay, please.
I used to be a trauma surgeon at Cook County Hospital. So one of my rotations for a month was taking care of raped women all day long.
Oh, my God.
So that is a very horrific environment. Not only does it, I think, first of all, it should never happen. But also think of the impact it ruins people's lives permanently. Mm-hmm. Not only them, but also their loved ones, their husbands, their friends. It's a domino effect. The children, it is a horrible, horrible thing. We can also talk about military sexual trauma, which is another horrible number. 40 to 60% of women in our military had military sexual trauma, which is another story altogether.
Yeah, nobody's talking about that.
Well, we're trying to. We are certainly treating certain women like that, which I've had the honor to be able to help them. But absolutely, we need, mm-hmm. you know, and I have tried to talk to celebrities to try to be spokesperson for that. Yeah. I have not been successful. Absolutely needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Well, you know, Doc, I got to say to you, first of all, bless you for the work you've done in this field, because with the sexual abuse thing, because I'll tell you, I've never honestly been able to get my arms around. This is a topic that really, it drives me just crazy. I don't really understand why these, you know, and it's, you know, and I say that, Doc, and, you know, this is, let's be clear, this has always been around since the beginning of mankind. This didn't happen yesterday. This has been happening and as long as human beings have been here. And I've really never, and I've always think about what creates the forces of evil that put people in a position where they want to do harm to somebody else. And of course, you can open that up to a bigger conversation, more than just even sexual abuse, but murder. He gets rape, murder, and it's really hard for rational people to rationalize with the irrational, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a societal type of question.
I know.
So it just shows that we have, I think, as human beings, we have some amazing capabilities.
Yeah.
And we also have some very basic drives, mm-hmm. which, you know, we're not as civilized as we think we are. Exactly. But, you know, that's another discussion altogether.
It is. No, it is. It is. I know. Listen, I can already tell. I could talk to you for days on this stuff, and we will ahead. We'll do this in the future, I am certain, because this is something we need to make an impact on, and I don't know how we get there, but it's a cause that's near and dear to me and near and dear on our platform, Doc, on America Out Loud, to get this message out there and try to right the wrongs and the injustices that are out there. But anyways, keeping it back to where we're at today on these numbers, the numbers are incredible of the trauma. Now, let me ask you a tough question here about all this. And why is it? And I don't know if there's an easy answer to this or not, so forgive me if this pushes the boundaries, but why is it that this sort of trauma to our lives, this PTSD stuff, why does it hit some people more than others? You know, when we talk about the life-altering trauma, I'm not talking about a Band-Aid thing here. I'm talking about life-altering trauma. Why is it some people are, it seems to impact them? Is it the level of the crime? Is it how they internalize it? Is it, what is it exactly, Doc?
Well, actually, there is a decent amount of evidence in this space. So let's talk about that for a second. So in order to understand it, I think you need to understand a couple of things. DNA plays a big part of it. There is a science about epigenetics. What that means is that DNA can change when somebody has a certain type of experience. And if I may, let me just talk to you about my life, and you'll see how we can, and I actually wrote a paper about this, medical paper. So my father was in World War II, so his function was they were bombing German ships, which were heavily guarded. So out of 10,000 people in his squadron, 100 people made it. So he came home with severe PTSD. So if you look at the science of epigenetics, that DNA change can last for 3 generations. So when somebody has that kind of a DNA, I already had that in me. Plus, he had an explosive temper, shall we say. So living with him was quite interesting. And that also creates more trauma. So then when my mother killed herself, when I was a surgical resident, I had more trauma. So all of that. So if somebody did not have this type of history with my father and the childhood trauma did not occur, my chance of developing PTSD would have been much lower. So if you look at a lot of special ops guys, a lot of times they have a history of childhood trauma, and that sets them up to be much more responsive to trauma to develop PTSD or PTSI. So that's only part of the answer, but there is biological, you can actually do a DNA test to figure out which one has a more chance of developing PTSI than the other.
Yeah, I've heard this before, Doc, where it's coming from our youth, which is why I'm always talking about the kids and protecting the kids, the children. And a lot of these traumas, you're right, are happening with children. And because this is what develops us as adults is, you know, back to our pre-adolescent years, right?
Correct. Even, you know, in the first couple of years,
That's right.
Unfortunately, when I was in trauma, I had to take care of kids that were raped were younger than 1 year of age, which is inhuman.
Yeah. I you could just feel your passion and the work you've done over the years and how much that has brought you to the point you're at now in your point to help this, help people out. I want to get to the crux of something now as we talk about this problem of PTSD and PTSI. One of the things I'm excited about, Doc, is that we have a lot of police lieutenants and we have a lot of law enforcement guys and top military people on our platform that are absolutely part of America Out Loud. And they're going to be very interested in hearing this conversation. In fact, I bet some of them are going to want to talk to you after the fact and see about how to get that message out there, is my guess. That probably will happen. But it's a topic that comes up a fair amount on America Out Loud, I have to tell you. It really does. And we do a fair amount of programming and stuff because, again, people like we have on this program, Colonel Jim Warshuk and Lieutenant Randy Sutton, Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro. We have a whole lit, Dr. Ron Martinelli. There's many we have here that talk about this. And so it is with the people that are suffering this out there in the trauma. What is so cool from what I understand, and listen, I only scratched the surface here in Dr. Lipov's world here. I don't know much about any of this. This was just put on my lap a day or so ago, but I liked what I was hearing about this. And I said, yeah, let's have them on. Let's do this. But you actually, and we're going to talk about this over the next hour again. We've got a couple of patients, veterans, that have suffered through some horrible situations in their life, and they're role models for this. And they actually have a very unique procedure done from Doc here. But Doc, before we get into the next segment and pause a moment here, what you have discovered, and I want to get to the, we're going to come back and get into more details later on this in the program. So let me be clear to tell everybody and tell you, couple of quick moments here before we pause here. And I want to ask you, you've got a procedure you put together that I think you're the pioneer of, but you'll correct me on that in a moment if that's incorrect. But I think it's called, if I pronounce this properly, stellate ganglion block for the treatment of PTSI, SGB C3 procedure, I think is what you call it. And are you the pioneer of this? Is that what's happened?
Yes, sir.
I thought so.
I can tell you how it came about if you like.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a lot about this, but let me ask you. So how did I get, let's get to the, if we get to the crux, the big aha moment on this, how did you discover this? If you can give me the brief summary on there, how did you discover this and what's the potential of this? And then we'll come back to the nitty gritty a little bit later in the program, but can you answer that for me right up front here?
Yeah, of course. So it all started. So stellate ganglion block has been around a long time since 1925. So I've been doing it for a number of years. And then I had a patient that had severe hot flashes and I was trying to treat her. So actually my brother and I came up with the idea of using stellate ganglion block to take away the hot flashes. And then when I was trying to figure out why it worked for that, which was kind of weird to me, I came across a paper from Finland when they were doing a procedure to take away hand sweating. And they noticed that took away PTSD, which was clipping some ganglia in the chest. And then I was able to figure out that that ganglia was connected to the stellate ganglion, which is in the neck. And then I did the first injection on a patient. who was actually non-military, and took away his PTSD, and he did not have to be admitted to a psychiatric ward. And that paper came out 2008. That's kind of brief summary how it came out.
Wow.
That's why I even did it.
Wow. So, I mean, it was a very unique discovery, first of all, and the potential of this, I'm going to assume from what I've looked at on your site and other things, is probably pretty tremendous, huh?
I believe so. So if you look at, if we didn't finish talking about the numbers, so if you think about it, a quarter of first responders have PTSD. Probably a quarter of our military forces have PTSD. MST is a little different numbers, or significantly different. One out of 10 women in college are attacked sexually, and so on. So the numbers, it's ridiculous. The cool thing about this procedure, it usually works within an hour, sometimes within 10 minutes. And a lot of times you do one application, and then that's all people need. A lot of times they do need a couple. So average number of procedures per person is about 2.5. The longest outlier now is about 13 years. And he's had 2 stellate ganglion blocks 13 years ago. He's still doing well. Wow. So it gives you a feel for that, as opposed to the current therapeutics, which is pharmaceuticals that actually don't work for PTSD, and psychotherapy that does work. Mm-hmm. But the problem is people cannot participate in psychotherapy because they get so triggered. So once you do a block, a lot of times the psychotherapy works so much better and people's lives get markedly improved rapidly.
I am really excited about this conversation. It's hard to explain exactly why, but I think you get the sense out there, my friends, as to why I am and talking to Dr. Lipov here in what the potential is. And I just met him today for the first time, as you have, just moments ago here on air. And we're going to meet a couple of other interesting folks in just moments here. Veterans, they are. Again, I always refer to our veterans here as American heroes, and I think their stories behind these two that we'll meet in moments are unique. Now, I don't know all the details about their stories, but we'll find out what they are together. I know they have both had the procedure done that Dr. Lipov has just talked about here. What I'd like to do is bring one on next and then have the doctor on with that person as well a little bit after, and we'll opine a little bit on what happened and what the possibilities are. And the main thing is, I hope the takeaway is from all of this today is that there is hope, that we can educate folks a little bit, that we can also try to reverse some of these horrible situations out there that Doc and I were just talking about, with the injustices out there that do take place on a daily basis. There has to be a better way forward where we can improve humanity, as far as I'm concerned. And that's my main number one goal here, people, on this program, on The Voice of a Nation, is to do that, is to raise the bar and change the outcomes to positive outcomes for all people. It's what I say all the time, to advance humanity. It's what I speak about, right? So we're going to do that, friends, in just a moment there. Let's pause, and we'll be back with more Voice of a Nation in just a moment.
Listen to Malcolm, The Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Okay, my friends, we are having a very unique conversation today, speaking to Dr. Lipov and speaking to a couple of our military veterans, and I'd like you to meet one right now. It's an Army captain, retired Kate Blanchard. And Kate was born in Wisconsin, now lives out on the West Coast. And she has had the procedure done that we were just talking about with Dr. Lipov and has firsthand knowledge of that. But, you know, Kate, you heard me up front talk to everybody here about, well, the trauma and the numbers and what really happens to people and how these things can take us right off our feet and change our life in a moment. And it's kind of hard sometimes to think of it in those terms, Kate, like how your life can be changed in just seconds. And by golly, it really can.
Yeah.
Now, your heart has to go out to folks who've gone through that. But I watched the video of your story, and it's a major story. It had massive implications. And I'd like to bring it back there. And I know this is a new story, too. This is only in the last few years. Yeah, bring us right there to what was going on there at the center, and what was the trauma that really changed your life?
Yeah, so I was a lieutenant at the time, active duty in the U.S. Army, and I was a nurse in the military, and I was put in charge of a civilian employee who had had a long history of both professional and behavioral disruption issues, being not meeting the standard, and then also behavioral issues when he was asked to meet a standard or to work, he was having breakdowns and harassment issues. And so I took over the position and had other employees as well that I supervised. And it was about a little under a year of dealing with this employee and trying to work with him. I was a new supervisor, obviously a nurse, and so not well-read on the HR world of everything and how to deal with such an aggressive person. And very early on, he started to bully me and harass me, yelling and screaming, making threats, and I felt afraid for my life. I had notified my command right away. I was very vocal about what was going on and the concerns that I had, both for myself and for my patients and other employees there. And things escalated over that year because nothing was done.
Kate, why did they not sit him down and deal with this? Do you have any idea as to why that was?
I first think that I had poor leadership, right? That my leadership was just unaware of what to do, or maybe they were aware of what to do, but just lacked the, you know, the underlying willpower and honestly, leadership skills to be able to address this issue. And I think that comes up a lot, right? When you look at workplace violence, sometimes people are not educated or they just don't want to deal with issues that are sensitive and put them in a hard situation, right? They just look the other way.
That's right. And so this guy who you were very uncomfortable with, and I seen that in the video itself. So you suffered some pretty severe problems with burns and what have you. He bought in some, was it gasoline or something in a bottle? Is that what I understand?
Yeah, about a year after this had started, it had escalated to a point where right. I was there after hours at the hospital working, and he had come in and he had threatened me before and come after me, but nothing was done. There was no safety nets put in place to protect me. Nobody was there to help me.
Right.
And I was working after hours. He had come into my office. He had thrown gasoline at me while I was sitting there working and lit me on fire.
Now, let me ask you this. So, what are we talking in seconds here? How quick does that all happen? When just so we get, you're talking seconds here, right?
Seconds.
I mean, you don't even know what hit you, did you? You don't even know what hit you.
No, I knew that it was, you know, I didn't even have time to stand up or to protect myself in any way. That's how quick it happens.
Wow.
You think about it in your head, like, what are you going to do? What, you know, what's your next action? But you just aren't able to get to that point before it all happens.
Mm-hmm. Kate, what a sick human being. Let me ask you right to the point. Where is this man today? Is he behind bars or is he out?
Yes. So unfortunately, in the federal system, attempted murder only holds a penalty of up to 20 years. And so he received the maximum of 20 years, and he's in jail.
Tell me, this happened in, was it 2016 or?
Yeah, 2016.
So this is a relatively recent event. This isn't way back when. This is relatively recent for you, right? I mean, this is, yeah.
Yeah.
And so give us a quick idea of the trauma you've gone through. And then we'll bring Doc on and we'll talk about this procedure. And I'm speaking about the PTSI part of it here.
So for me, I was lit on fire. And then after I was on fire and people came to my rescue, my attacker came back with a straight blade and a large industrial scissors and came after me, stabbing me and wrestling me to the ground and, you know, trying to kill me kicking me. And so, you know, not only that trauma and the trauma of knowing that it was going to come, right? Like something that you knew was going to happen and then did happen. So it was that feeling of being let down and that feeling of not being protected, but then also burn injuries are horrific. And I've had over 200 surgeries since the injuries. I've gone through a number of grafting. I'm 18% burned to my body, mostly my upper body and my face, which causes this really deep scar tissue in what they call banding. And so it disfigures you and it causes daily life to be extremely difficult. And the things that you were once able to do, like nursing, playing with my children, doing those things, you're just no longer able to do. So saying that it turned my life upside down is an understatement by far.
It's an understatement. Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, scar tissue is not good. I mean, I know that it encompasses, there's a lot of pain factor that comes from that. It alters your body in such a way. Kate, you've gone through unbelievable, you're an incredible person to gone through what you've gone through in the last few years. How far back did you have this procedure, which we'll talk about in a moment with Dr. Lipov? How far back? When did you have that, please? I don't know.
Yeah, so it was about a year after the attacks. I want to say 2017.
Okay.
I was introduced to Dr. Lipov.
Okay. And this was something that was presented to you that could possibly help you, right?
Yes, yes.
And so you said you probably figured you had nothing to lose. It's not like you can get it's not like you can get a cure for this problem on every street corner, right?
I mean, I've tried everything. Before that, I was at the burn unit in San Antonio, had been on every drug you could ever imagine, was not sleeping, couldn't be out in public, barely had very severe anxiety, and just nightmares. It's just horrific nightmares.
Let's bring Dr. Lipov on now and talk a little bit more with him, with you as well, Kate. And well, let me go to the doc now. Doc, when you seen Kate Blanchard initially here and the trauma that she went through, and I didn't even know how severe it was, but now we know it was severe. And this completely altered her life in every way, shape, or form. What was your thoughts initially when you talked to her and this, and then you tried this procedure, and how confident was you that it could help her?
Well, first of all, hi, Kate. Nice to talk to you again.
Yes.
I used to be a burn. I did burn surgery also. So I understood a lot about what she went through, which is, I think saying horrific kind of doesn't give you the scope of it, because, you know, she and I both are medical. So we understand burns, and I think her spirit is just amazing. And I mean, I was kind of overwhelmed, frankly, just understanding the trauma and everything she went through. But if you look at it, so the brain, if you take the brain out of the skull, brain doesn't know the difference until the input comes in. So the point is, if somebody gets burned or gets shot or something else happens, the same chemicals change the same part of the brain, leading to PTSD. So theoretically, the response should be the same. It doesn't really matter what trigger occurs. So I thought we had a good chance of it working.
The procedure itself, what are we talking? Is this a day procedure? Are you in the hospital for a period of time? What does one go through when they have this procedure done?
Well, let me just kind of walk you through it real quick. So after the patient checks in, no, we don't have to put patient in the hospital for that. We usually put an IV in, and then we take the patient to the operating room. The procedure time is about 5 to 7 minutes.
Okay.
And then when the patient comes out of the procedure, I see how they do. If they feel great emotionally, then we stop. And if they don't, we go back into the C3 or the second block about 20 minutes or 30 minutes later. And then I watch the patient for another hour and they usually can go home feeling a lot different.
Are they on anesthesia when this is done?
About 80% of patients, we do get an anesthetic. About 20% people do not want to go to sleep and they're wide awake, which is, as I tell them, I don't feel it either way, so they have a choice.
I see. And is it painful for those who don't go to take that? Or?
Most of the time, not very painful, but it is uncomfortable.
Okay, gotcha.
Because, you know, if you think about it, I have to numb up the skin and put the needle next to the throat.
Right, right.
Not fun. But most people can tolerate if they choose to do it awake.
Exactly. Now, what about, so what's interesting to me, I did not know, is when you first do that with the needle itself, so you're looking, this is a very unique situation because we're talking about, it almost sounds to me like you're looking for instant gratification on that relief. And if they don't have it, then you know it didn't work right then. Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, you can ask Kate right there. Let's ask her.
Let's ask Kate. Yeah.
Yeah, so right away, he could tell, you know, what just talking to me the first time that I had it was at C6. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Lipoff, but it didn't work and I was still very tearful.
No, you're absolutely right. No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so very tearful. And he could tell, he was like, nope, this isn't what we're looking for. This isn't the result that we're looking for. I went back to sleep, came out, and it was an overwhelming feeling of, it almost is like you feel everything that had been going on, but in a way that you can handle it, that you want to deal with it. And so to say that, you know, you're completely better at that point, no, but you're left dealing with some of this stuff and able to deal with it. It's a different kind of experience, one that I've never felt before, but you can definitely tell that something has changed.
Yeah, well, it sounds to me like that's the key, Kate, is that you're able to deal with it. It's not like all the problems went away instantly, right?
So we treated, so Kate's experience is very similar to a lot of our patients. So let me just quickly tell you a story about a patient we treated who was special ops, and he had a horrible issue when he was out overseas. He had to shoot a 10-year-old child laden explosives, and it was really problematic. So we did the procedure. And right after the procedure, he said, I remember doing it, but the horror of it is gone. I remember what happened, and he was able to deal with it. It's exactly the thing. So it's basically, it seemed to deactivate the emotional part of the memory, but keeps the memory intact. Would you say that's about right, Kate?
Yes, definitely. It was, for the first time, I was able to sleep afterwards. You know, you come out of anesthesia anyway, you're a little sleepy. But I went back, I was with my mom at the time, and I went back to the hotel, and that was the first time that I was actually able to get any kind of rest and not have nightmares and not feel this anxiety that I had carried with me for over a year.
So, Kate, we're talking now, it sounds to me like if I do the math quickly, you're talking about a year and a half, 2 years ago, you had this procedure, yeah?
Yes. So I've had it twice.
You've had it a second time. Now, why did you have to have it the second time?
So for me, the first time was very effective and I felt it right away. But over a period of time, my symptoms started to come back and it wasn't like I woke up one day and I just felt everything. But over about a year, year and a half, I started to feel more anxiety and more just not being able to deal with my emotions and not being able to deal with life events. I mean, as you could tell, I'm going through a lot of surgery. I've had to get out of the military. And so there's a lot of stressors, right, that continue to build even afterwards. And so it's the second time had helped me kind of recoup and to get back to the point that I was at.
Okay. Doc, explain to me, please. So somebody has the procedure done over a period of time now, as Kate was just saying, certain things start to creep back into your life a little bit there. And then they have a procedure a second or third time. How normal is that within this process? Can you give us any boundaries as to how often this happens or how many patients have to have it at an additional time?
I would say most people need it repeated.
That's so normal then.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you think about it, it depends. And Kate has gone through so much and you know, there's so much trauma. Exactly. It depends on a couple of things. It depends on your genetics. It depends on how much trauma you have and how often does it happen. So we've taken care of, for example, a 12-year-old child who was molested, and she was doing great for a year after the block. She came back with symptoms, came back, and turned out somebody tried to abduct her in a shopping mall.
Wow.
So it re-triggers her again.
Wow.
So it depends on a number of factors.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's crazy sometimes. Some people just are in the wrong place at the wrong time, I guess. But, Doc, in the crux of this is, when you're putting that needle in there, tell us what exactly is happening again. Repeat to us exactly, why do they get the relief? Because...
If I may, let me tell you what PTSI is.
Please.
And then you'll understand it. So when somebody has severe trauma, and I think Kate would, I would say it's probably as extreme as it can get.
That's right.
Body produces something called NGF, nerve growth factor.
Okay.
So it's a substance that seems to increase growth of fight and flight nerves or sympathetic nerves. That's called sprouting, is a technical neuroscientific term. As long as those nerves are there in the brain, it increases levels of norepinephrine, which is a cousin of adrenaline. You probably heard that term.
Yeah.
So as long as there is too much norepinephrine, people have the symptoms of PTSI. So it turns out when you do an injection in a ganglion in the neck, the sprouting seems to go back to the pre-trauma state, which is called pruning.
Okay.
And then as the norepinephrine levels drop, people feel better immediately. And over time, this pruning occurs, so the sympathetic fibers go back to before trauma. And that's why a shot that lasts 8 to 12 hours
Wow. Can
last for years.
Wow.
For example, I treated Clint, another veteran.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 4.5 years. He's doing amazing still. One set of injections.
So it just depends upon the situation. I get it. The relief of that when you put the needle in there and that stress comes off of them. Again, the problems don't specifically go away, but how they're dealing with the problem is changed big time, really. Kate, how are you feeling today, Kate, at this moment? And you've had it twice. And how do you feel right now?
I feel much better. You know, you, in the beginning of the talk, you had talked about a cure. And I think that what Dr. Lipoff does in the stellate ganglion block has made it possible for me in a PhD program at the University of Washington. I'm able to play with my children again and to fully participate in my life. And so it's been a huge change for me.
Let's continue on here in a moment here. Friends, we'll be back in just a moment.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I've got to tell you what, we're learning some things today. For me, I never know what we're going to get into when we do these programs, but, I knew we'd do a little bit of heavy lifting today, but by golly. Please welcome on here Ben Jobeck. He's a combat veteran and trauma survivor. And again, up in Alaska. But Ben, you've been through, you've had tremendous trauma in your life, and your story has had major implications that you've gone through. Let me just turn it to you a moment and give our listeners a sense of what's happened here, what has put this all in your lap, this PTSI, and where you're at in your life, please.
I've personally experienced probably upwards of 35 significant traumas throughout my life. They started at age 3 and a half. I was basically physically and sexually abused before I could even talk.
At three and a half years old, Ben.
3 and a half years old, yes, sir. Following that abuse at, you know, age 3 and a half, in my first home, I transferred to a second home where I experienced horrific abuse there. As a result of the trauma, I was bullied all throughout school.
You were bullied in school. What were you being bullied for?
So I was physically and sexually abused at age 3 and a half in my first home. Basically, I transferred to, you know, over to my second home, and I was abused there as well. At the time, I didn't know it, but I was experiencing symptoms of PTSD. So
this was having an impact in your life as a young man.
It sure was. A lot of the symptoms that I was having, I was acting those symptoms of trauma out, you know, in the household I was in school. I could never really connect with, you know, other kids or really anybody, because that earliest form of trust that I had as a kid, it was taken away from me, you know, before I could even talk. So, you know, moving forward, my life was just riddled with trauma. I remember that, you know, I was in high school, and I remember the bullying I went through, you know, throughout high school. And one of the ways that, you know, I felt that I could escape was to volunteer as a first responder. So at age 16, age 17, I volunteered as a first responder. I worked on a paramedic ambulance service, and I was a firefighter as well. At that time, you know, I didn't know it now. I didn't know it then, but I do know it now. I mean, I was just exposing myself to more trauma. I witnessed numerous suicides, children hit by dump trucks, cars.
So, Ben, none of that was helping your cause out. You didn't know that was going to have the impact in your life. But none of that was helping that journey out for you, Clay. And, you know, there's something else interesting. I'm so glad you're sharing this with people, because here's the thing I didn't focus on early on, and you just brought it up. And, you know, Ben, I talk a fair amount about bullying on this network. And it's a cause that I'm passionate about. And I want people to hear you, because of their children, that potentially the ramifications of those children that are being bullied, not just the point of children that might commit suicide, and that does indeed happen, but children that are bullied and their lives are torn upside down. Now, you got to the point of your life with all of these things that have gone wrong where you, as I read your backstory, you were at a point where you almost did commit suicide. Is that correct?
Several times, yes, sir.
Yeah. And so this trauma was just seemed to be following you around in life. And you get to the point, Ben, what was the turning point as to when you went to find help to get this procedure done? What was the turning point, buddy?
Well, let me just explain kind of the chain of events here. So if you can imagine, you know, your life starting out, you know, the way mine did, and I really had no escape from trauma. My entire life, everywhere I went, there was trauma. Every type of situation that I immersed myself in, I experienced some sort of trauma. So from the point at which I, you know, was a firefighter EMT and then transferred over to the military, it just made it worse. I got out of the military, and at that time, I began to do what a lot of people do, which is self-medicate. I really didn't know what was wrong with me. I was having symptoms, and I just, anything I could put in my body to take the pain away from the past is kind of the route that I took at the time. I'm sitting here today, you know, in front of you with 12 years sober, having gone through what I've gone through. But how I got to the point of meeting Dr. Liblov, I made a choice to get sober back in 2007, right around my fifth year of sobriety. All that trauma that I had stuffed, the childhood physical abuse, the sexual abuse, friends being murdered in brutal homicides, the suicides that I've seen, fellow firefighters being killed in action, almost being blown up in the military, 9/11, the Boston bombing, all that stuff, and that stuff that I went through just started coming out in the form of panic attacks, and I didn't know what was going on. I basically got sober back in 2007, 2008, and I had a set of clothes on my back, and I worked my way out of that financial, spiritual, and emotional bottom. For once in my life, I became what I thought was being successful. I thought that, you know, what I needed to be okay was all these tangible things, like, you know, a college degree. You know, if I just had the right woman, the right amount of money, the right car, the right house, I would just be okay. I didn't know who I was. So at that time, I think it just hit me. It was a very rapid onset of PTSD. I went from basically running two businesses, going to school full time, just constantly on the go, to being totally incapacitated within a matter of 3 months by debilitating panic attacks. I did 3 stints voluntarily in a VA psych unit.
Right.
From there, I ended up in a homeless shelter for a year and a half.
Wow.
I went through chest surgery in the homeless shelter due to the severe stomach problems from PTSD.
Ben, you've been PTSD. Through the ringer. You've been through it.
For sure.
Yeah, let's bring Doc on now. Let's bring Doc on to talk to him as well here. And you're talking about extreme cases. That's got to be an extreme case as well, isn't it, Doc?
Hey, Ben.
Hey, how you doing, Doc?
I'm good. So I would say you've picked, you know, honestly, there's so many stories. And, wow. You know, it has absolutely been an honor to be able to help people such as Ben and Katie, and it's amazing to be able to do that. But, you know, you're right. Those are just horrible stories, you know. I think the key point is, as long as there is hope, you can get through amazing things. And then look at Ben being able to go through all of this crazy crap, and he never gave up, and he kept looking, and that's how he found me. I think that's the key to remember. I think as long as there is hope, just a little bit, people aren't going to die. Once you lose the hope, and I think that's what happened to my mother, and that they killed themselves.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's the key. And, you know, we could talk about the biology of it and all of that, but, you know, it's inhuman what he had to go through, right?
I want to bring Katie back on with us as well. So we've got everybody here with us. So this procedure now that we're talking about here, so is this being done in other places as well? Are other doctors doing this at this point, or is it just yourself? I don't really know. What's the answer to that?
Yeah. So Dr. Mulvaney and the group from Walter Reed, Dr. McLean, actually was the first one to repeat my work. And thanks to their efforts, they have jointly, I think, a number of military institutions have taken it up. It's not available enough yet. But Tripler Hospital has been doing it for a number of years. So has Dr. Mulvaney and Walter Reed. And then I think he's left the military. He has a private practice now. There are other doctors who are doing it.
Is this trademarked or no? Is this patent? Or?
You cannot patent the procedure.
Okay. Okay.
I do have a patent on the medication that I use that seems to work better.
Right.
And we're working on that. But, you know, it's like, so the procedure is operator dependent, meaning you have to know how to do it. I've modified a procedure further, which increased our success rate significantly. So that's why I call it SGBC3. So as Kate was talking about, you know, the stellaganglion block sometimes just doesn't give enough oomph. And that's why we had to do the second procedure. And that's more complicated.
Right.
But I think it works really well. As you can see in front of you, the two patients who have gone through it.
Yeah, yeah. Doc, what's the success rate of this thing?
Well, let me first of all give you a disclaimer. So FDA doesn't like doctors talking about disclaimer or whatever.
Okay.
But if you look at conventional, when it was started, most people were reporting 70 success rate, 70-75%. With my few modifications, I think we're looking more than 85%. Maybe between 85 to 90%, something like that.
Katie, let me go to real quickly get a last comment from you and Ben as well. Your life now that you've got this back now, you've had it a couple of times here. This has got to be significant news for you. And I would imagine you're back looking forward to your future life, huh?
Yes, most definitely. And I would say that anybody suffering with PTSD, if you've had that feeling yourself, you feel like you can't get out of this hole. And so, like you had said earlier, I didn't have much to lose. And Dr. Lipoff has definitely helped giving me my life back.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can think of a lot of people who would benefit from knowing this, Katie. And I'm going to, and it's just so good to have this now to know so I can direct people accordingly here. Ben, you as well, you feel pretty good right now. This has been a big, big deal for you. Big game changer, huh?
I do, Malcolm. You know, I basically went, similar to Katie's story, I had tried everything and I was at the end of my rope. I basically went from a point where my PTSD was so severe that I was locking myself in my house. I would go out and try to check my own mail and walk back inside and vomit because I was triggered so much. And with a matter of 3 procedures, I went from being totally incapacitated to being able to go back to work, run a business full time, manage 5 employees. And the type of business that I do, I actually hire vets that have PTSD and other addicts in recovery. So it was very life-changing, and Dr. Lipoff saved my life.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. He has saved your life, and considering that, you know, the alternative of, you know, when you were suicidal, in fact, the outcome could have been entirely different. And, you know, Dr. Lipoff, again, when we deal with issues like bullying, which Ben had brought up early on, and abuse as young people go through, these things are life-altering situations, and I think the real lesson here is that people, they've got to watch out for the kids because it's the worst kind of victim, isn't it? Children, you know, Doc, you know?
Childhood victimization is probably some of the worst, but I don't know how do you qualify it. I mean, in what right mind somebody pours gasoline and burns a young woman?
I know.
I mean, in what universe does somebody rape a child at 2 years old who's pre-verbal? I mean, how, you know, it's a horrible, horrible, horrible. What's horrible? I don't know. It's all bad.
It is.
I don't know. It's overwhelming.
This site here, sgbptsd.com, is that a site? Is that your site?
Yes, that's my site, sgbptsd.com. That's primarily designed for people to sign on and be treated. It's okay. That simple.
All right.
We are about to launch one more site. It's doihaveptsd.org. And that site is basically just for people to sign on, and it should be active in about a week. Find out if you have PTSD or not.
So, friends, the website again, sgbptsd.com, and it says right at the top here, from fight or flight to laughter. And isn't that a lesson for all of us in life, huh? If we could go from, you've heard the term from fight to flight. Are you going to fight? Are you going to flight? To laughter it's an interesting way to put it here. If your life can be changed like that, it's a beautiful thing here. So I encourage folks to check it out and see more about it. You know, I know there's a lot of other work Doc is doing in the not-for-profit area as well. We'll talk to him more ahead. I've learned a lot today. I hope you have as well. I think you must have on this whole front of PTSD and the battle ahead here for all, for anybody who suffered that sort of trauma here. Friends, as always, I thank you for being with me here on the journey here. Remember, it's time to get involved and get loud.